And now,
great to be back.
Back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
Awesome.
And your host, Bill Frank.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Bill Frank Radio Show here on KVTA News Talk 1520. I'm your host, Bill Frank. I'm bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is business and politics. As we get closer to the election, these two subjects dominate the conversation. My next guest knows a little bit about both business and politics. He is an internationally respected authority in economics and finance and corporate leadership. He also understands politics, having campaigned twice for the Republican nomination for the presidency. We'll discuss why free markets are moral and big government isn't from his latest book, Freedom Manifesto. Steve Forbes is the chairman and editor-in-chief of Forbes Media, which includes Forbes Business Magazine. Steve was a Republican candidate for the U.S. primaries in 1996 and 2000. He's the son of longtime Forbes Magazine publisher Malcolm Forbes and the grandson of that publication's founder, B.C. Forbes. Steve is also a member of the Board of Trustees for the Heritage Foundation, an influential Washington, D.C. public policy research institute. Joining us from New York City. Hi, Steve. Welcome back to the show. How are you today?
Good to be with you, Bill. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being our guest. And fairness is a term that's being bandied about this election season. It sort of implies a sense of morality is being applied. It also fosters the illusion that the government is compassionate and caring. You believe that this is untrue. Free markets are really what's compassionate and moral, and the big government is just the opposite. Now, that's the anathema to what's being touted this election. So why do you believe that free markets over big government?
Well, that question's why we wrote the book I wrote with Elizabeth Ames, is that when we looked at the situation, we found that big government meets its own needs while free markets meet the needs of people. If you think about it, you only succeed in free markets if you provide a product or service that somebody else wants. So without you even realizing it, it has you interacting with people, trying to figure out what people might want. It encourages cooperation. You got to put a team together to make things happen. You may not love your neighbor, but you sure as heck want to sell to your neighbor, so it breaks down barriers between people. It allows an environment for not only cooperation, but also innovation, creativity, turning scarcity into abundance. And you see it with cell phones. 30 years ago, cell phones cost $3,995. They're as big as a shoebox, had a battery life of 30, 40 minutes. Now there are over 5 billion around the world, and it seems that everyone has cell phones. By contrast, big government, despite all the rhetoric, meets its own needs. And you saw that very graphically and sadly in the Chicago school strike, where it was all about salaries and benefits and not about how to improve one of the worst school systems in the country. You saw it on the GM bailout, which was provided billions of dollars, of which no court would have done, to the coffers of the United Auto Workers, a union that was critical in President Obama's election. Again, politics trumped what would have been done under the rule of law and free markets. So free markets ends up bringing out the best of human nature, and big government fosters division, 1% versus the 99%, a cramped vision of the future. So bottom line, free markets do what big government says it does, and big government acts like they say free markets do. It's big government that is called amoral and out for its own interests.
Wow. My guest is Steve Forbes. Steve, in just that answer, you actually touched on a couple of examples that I wanted to touch on. So let's go back and address them one by one. You mentioned cell phones. I love the cell phone example from the handset technology, and that's brilliant. However, when you take a look at the handsets, that's one side of it. But what happens when you look at the underlying infrastructure of telephone companies? Back in 1984, we broke up Ma Bell. Now, since then, we've had consolidation, so now we're really down to AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, Nextel, and T-Mobile, and a few small players there as well. Telcos are tightly regulated by the FCC, a government organization, and the AT&T merger with T-Mobile was blocked by the FCC. Now, we decided as a group of people, as a society, a long time ago in the middle of the 20th century, the airwaves are in the public interest. That's the way we defined it. So if unregulated, wouldn't the telcos revert back to an oligopoly or a monopoly?
No. The thing about free markets is, if they are truly open, is that people always find ways to do things very differently. You're going to see a bunch of new players come into the wireless area. I'm old enough to remember when IBM was considered a monopolist in the mainframe business. And free markets, though, were allowed to operate, And guess what? We got first mini computers whose motto was 75% of the power of a mainframe at 25% of the price. Then we got personal computers, PCs, networked together. And by the early 1990s, IBM was on the ropes financially, had one foot in the corporate graveyard, was rescued itself. Today, it's a mighty powerful, innovative company. But 20 years ago, it was on the ropes. And so you allow free markets to operate. You look at General Motors, once considered a monopolist, now struggling for survival. So you allow free markets to operate, and people always find ways to do brand new things. I remember, you know, we remember 15 years ago, supposedly Microsoft was about to take over the world. Well, it's still a very successful company, but I don't think people are spending sleepless nights worrying about Microsoft taking over the world.
No, they're not. My guest is Steve Forbes. He's co-author of the book Freedom Manifesto, Why Free Markets Are Moral and Big Government Isn't. But Steve, with the telcos, for example, you and I couldn't get into the telco business. It's just too capital intensive. And you say there'll be companies that will sidestep it. Give us some examples of how one might sidestep, say, the telco industry.
Well, they have a lot of fixed costs. And that's why, for example, a company called LightSquared had the regulators blocked it in Washington. But people are willing to commit capital if they have an open field where they can do these things at a very cheap rate. You know, you see these ads for Vonage and others who come along and do things very cheaply. You saw it in numerous areas. Remember, Xerox once dominated the copier business. Companies like the old Kodak and IBM tried to challenge them, failed. And instead, you got companies like Canon and a handful of others start with cheap, small machines and then work their way up the food chain. So even in a capital-intensive business, if people find some new way to do things, they will. Take, for example, another company that's considered big and bad these days, Walmart. 50 years ago, was a small Northwest Arkansas retailer. At the time, companies like Kmart and its predecessor were 50 times the size of Walmart. But Sam Walton figured out how to use mainframe computers, how to develop specialized software first to manage inventories better than anyone else, and then do the supply chain in a detailed way that it was never done before. And now they're the big one. But they went in one of the oldest industries around retail and came up with a new way of better way of doing traditional things. And they bested companies that were many times their size, like Kmart and Sears.
That they did. My guest is Steve Forbes. Steve, I want to return to the automobile industry for just a minute and drill down on that if we can. The administration claimed that the $85 billion bailout to General Motors and Chrysler has been repaid. However, we, the taxpayers, hold shares of General Motors stock as part of that repayment. Now, the Washington Post, which one would hardly consider a conservative newspaper, says that if the Treasury Department were to sell the shares at today's price, we'd incur a loss of about $16 billion. And today's price is somewhere around $24.50. It would literally have to double to $56 for us to be whole on that proposition. Now, a 2010 study by the Center of Automotive Research found that the automobile rescue saved about 1.14 million jobs, and it saved the government $28.6 billion in lost tax revenue. So that works out to be $74,561 per saved job. You're a businessman. Give me the cost-benefit rationale and justification for this bailout.
Well, first of all, that million-job thing is preposterous. It assumes that if GM and Chrysler filed for bankruptcy, they would cease to exist, all their suppliers would cease to exist. And we know in the real world that's not the way things work. That's the whole purpose of getting court protection, is you rework out your credit arrangements, rework out your labor arrangements. For example, every major airline in the country, the legacy airline, has had at least one bankruptcy, some two or three. Did that mean that when United went bankrupt that it ceased to fly? No, it meant it reorganized and tried again. Same with Delta. Americans going through the process now. So you have plenty of airlines that have done that, and people still flew them, even though they are under Chapter 11 under bankruptcy law. So all it would have meant with, in case of General Motors in early 2009, is that it would reorganize, downsize, which it did anyway, and creditors would get their share, workers would get their share, but they'd all take a haircut. And instead, what we had happen was the government stepped in for political reasons. They shafted the creditors, gave them a fraction of what they would get, made the big payoff to the unions. Non-union workers at companies like Delphi got the short end of the stick very, very badly. A lot of auto dealers were put out of business, 63,000 jobs for GM dealers alone. And this was not the pristine thing that absolute thing that the government that the administration portrays itself as being. We have laws that work these things out, and if allowed the rule of law to work out, it works.
It does, no doubt. My guest is Steve Forbes, co-author of the book Freedom Manifesto. So, Steve, I want to bring it down to more the personal level, if I can. During the Great Recession, the justification for extending unemployment benefits was that welfare and entitlement programs are the only way to provide compassion. So what impact did extending the unemployment benefits have on stimulating our recovery? And in what ways was it moral to extend these benefits?
Well, don't extend benefits or get in the debate on benefits on the idea that this stimulates the economy. It does not. What it does is take resources and give them to people who are unemployed. That does not stimulate the economy any more than stimulus spending stimulates the economy, because you're taking resources from one hand and giving it to another hand. It's not the creation of resources, it's the redistribution of resources. So you should argue the thing on the basis of, is this the best way to deal with the problem? How do you make sure that people stay somewhat afloat without giving them incentives to wait for the best job possible instead of taking what they can and then bootstrapping their way up? Those are legitimate debates, but it's nothing to do with stimulus. And I think once this crisis is over, which I think it will be in the next year and a half, we're going to have a good debate on the best way to deal with when you have bouts of unemployment. But what we have here is the worst of all worlds, where the economy is sputtering, so you don't get job creation. And as a matter of fact, most of the new jobs created since March, almost all of them, are part-time jobs for people who would like full-time work but can't find it.
Yeah, it's a very sad situation. I think another disturbing fact is that long-term unemployment is now 45.9% of total unemployment. That means the people who are receiving those unemployment benefits have been out there for a good long time. My guest is Steve Forbes. Steve, in your earlier answer, you talked about the rule of law, and I want to come back to that because I think this is a curious factor after the Great Recession that we've just had. If the Great Recession was caused, as some people say, by the misapplication of weapons of financial mass destruction, as Warren Buffett likes to call them, sold fraudulently to unsuspecting consumers, as the government would have you believe, with these laws in place, why hasn't somebody been brought to trial? Not one CEO, not one government official, not one business person has been brought to trial or convicted over this. How do we explain this apparent discrepancy?
First of all, in terms of the cause of the crisis, and this, I think, gets to the answer to answer your question, is that it was not some massive failure of free markets. What it was what happens when a big government, and I again emphasize big government with a B, not small G government, which is what we should have, when big government gets with all the best of intentions, gets in areas that it has no competence in, the result is a disaster. The Federal Reserve has been, starting 10 years ago, started to undermine the value of the dollar. They thought that would be a way to stimulate the economy. So it printed much, much too much money. And as a result, you got a housing bubble. The housing bubble never would have happened if the Fed hadn't printed so much money and being imitated by other central banks around the world. So the government, and we all know the role of Fannie and Freddie, $1.5 trillion in junk mortgages they guaranteed. No private company would have done that on their own without a government guarantee. And other rules about lowering housing standards. And so the market was short-circuited, and we saw the sad result of it. So in terms of, bankers do not make loans or mortgages if they think they're going to lose money on it. They didn't think they would lose money on it, but the government totally disrupted normal credit procedures. When I was growing up, you paid 20% down for a house. You can make an argument 10% is just as sound, but this idea of 0% down or even negative money down, I mean, come on. And the government encouraged it.
That it did, and it was reckless on their part. My guest is Steve Forbes, a co-author of the book Freedom Manifesto. And Steve, I'm glad you brought up printing money, because the last time you're on the show, we were discussing the connection between the Federal Reserve printing money and the unrest at that time in Egypt. Now, Egypt, as we know, touched off what became known as the Arab Spring. Just this past September 11th of 2012, the Middle East erupted in violence against U.S. embassies and consulates in Libya, Egypt, Yemen, and Tunisia. So connect the dots between loose monetary policy and failed foreign policy to explain what brought us to this point.
Well, when you have loose money, money goes into hard assets. And so you short circuit. It's like introducing a virus into your computer. It corrupts the information. So what happens is you get a huge surge in commodity prices. In our own country, in the U.S., farmland is going up over 40% in the last two and a half years. Is that some surge in demand for food? No. I think a big chunk of it is what happens when you get a cheap dollar. We saw the same phenomenon in the 1970s. So when you have corn also being raised in price by ethanol, which again is a government program, no free market would have done this on this scale. And so you shoot up artificially the price of things like corn, soybeans, and wheat. And guess what happens? Countries that are still developing, where people are still very much dependent on food, where most of their budgets go, or a big part of it, they suddenly are thrown against the wall, which breeds distress. Then you combine it with bad economic advice we give to these countries, which is devalue your money, which just simply sets off inflation, which leads to more unrest. And raising taxes, which makes it very difficult for your economy to get back on its feet. And you have a recipe for what we see unfolding today. Now, no one will give you the illusion that if we pursued the right policies, it'd suddenly be dancing in the streets and everyone would be hugging each other. But what you would have is a chance to develop more vibrant economies, develop middle classes. And we know that when middle classes grow, you have more of a chance for a commercial society and one less addicted to violence against its neighbors.
My guest has been Steve Forbes, co-author of the book Freedom Manifesto, Why Free Markets Are Moral and Big Government Isn't. Steve, you probably piqued the interest of some of my listeners. If they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
They can go to freedommanifesto.us. That's not .gov, but .us to learn more. And they can also go to our Facebook page, and they can buy the book at bookstores and also online, either through our website or Amazon or Barnes & Noble and others.
Great. Steve, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
Look forward to it, Bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you.